If you're constantly struggling to pay your bills, something's going on. You're either not profitable or you are profitable, but you're doing some stupid things with your cash.
If you're not looking at a cash flow report, it's typically because you're, one, don't have good books, but two, you're also kind of ignoring it.
I mean, it's going to kill you quickly or kill you slowly, but you're toast.
Less stress, more time, more money. Welcome to the Cash Flow Contractor Deep Dive.
Martin, okay. Martin.
Hola.
Hola. Hey, congrats to you, your family, your daughter Katie getting engaged. It's exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty fun. She got engaged to a guy in New York, and I think we'll never see her again in Oklahoma. How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? Do you know that saying?
Paris, like Paris?
Yeah.
Paris.
I think it's a song. After World War I, all the farm boys, went to Europe, and I think it was a song. How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris?
That's
how are you going to keep them in Oklahoma after they've lived in Manhattan and Brooklyn?
You know, you saying that you may not see her again because she's in New York, it makes me think about the movie Four Christmases. Have you seen that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's so good. It's one of the funniest comedy movies in general, but it's a great Christmas movie where basically couple that meets in the big city. I think it's San Francisco, but meet in a big city, but then they've got to go back home for the holidays and both of their parents are divorced. And so it's four Christmases.
Four families.
Right. So, man, this the best, the best scenarios. Like one of them, his friend who stayed back in the town, who was his best friend growing up, ends up becoming his stepdad and like marries his mom. and he goes like they visit and his friend is like, hey, can I get your gas money for coming out here? Just such a good movie. Anyways, let's see if I can segue that. Gas money. We're talking about the cash flow report today. This is kind of stemming. We're actually doing kind of a series here after our wonderful conversation with Robert Keyes. Go and listen to that episode if you haven't checked it out. But one thing that he talked about, Martin, was just a regular rhythm of reviewing his cash flow report. And you and I wanted to dig more into that and just really give greater clarity to our audience of what that rhythm may look like and the reason why it's so valuable. So the cash flow report, let's just start by outlining very clearly in layman's terms what it is. If I don't understand anything you say, I'm going to have us clarify. So go ahead. Okay. What is the cash flow report?
Well, the first thing is to say the cash flow report we are talking about today is not the statement of cash flows from your bookkeeping.
Right.
That's a very valuable report. It's historic. It tells you a lot of things. That is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is a practical list of information that you can receive on a regular basis that is very useful to you in managing your cash. And also, we're going to talk about guiding your future actions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So simply stated, matter of fact, I was overcomplicating it. You set me down before this. I was going, oh, I've got to teach them how, or tell them how to write this whole thing and it sums here and has that. Go, no. This is going to be something your bookkeeper or your accountant, and maybe even you have to do it, but your bookkeeper will have on your desk Monday morning at 9 o'clock,
yep,
or Tuesday at 1, whatever, on a regular basis. And it's a report that's going to list different information. It will start with your current available cash. And that doesn't mean greenbacks. That means cash in the bank. Taken from your balance sheet, not from your banking app, because mm-hmm. there's still such things as outstanding payments that haven't cleared the banking app.
Right.
So it starts with cash. Then the next thing on a list is a statement of your aging accounts receivable.
So in other words, let's define that really quick. Because I think we all know accounts receivable, it's money you haven't been paid yet, but you've already invoiced. Right. But what do you, define that aging term for everyone.
Well, an aging accounts receivable report readily available in QuickBooks or any kind of software that's any good will show you what's current. In other words, you're allowing 30 days and it shows how much is current. It's not overdue yet. That shows 31 to 60, 61 to 90,
right,
and out to 120 days, typically, or beyond that. So it shows you what, by looking at it, you can quickly see, oh, Bob's 30 days past due. I need to, I'm going to assume we're going to collect that one and go after. But by having that report in front of you, let's just say we do have it. We'll talk about how to use it here in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got your cash. You got the amounts that are due you as accounts receivable. You have your known expenses for that week, that from historic, like maybe the rents due that week. You've got a payroll due that week, payroll taxes due that week. Maybe the insurance payment is due that week. That's a lot of things all due in 1 week. But you have the ability to know what is due in a particular week. And if it's something that's due in a month, that month, but not necessarily that week, that's a place that you have that you can control your cash flow. You can pay it or not pay it.
Right.
So we've got accounts receivable. We've got cash, accounts receivable, known expenses. The next thing you'll list are debt payments due that week.
Right.
Okay. Your mortgage on your bank is not an expense, so it won't be in known expenses. But if it's due, you need to put it down because you're going to have to pay it that way.
Right.
Right. Or at least you need to be aware of it. Then you list an aging accounts payable. And that is money that you owe your suppliers, typically suppliers. And it's also aged. If your suppliers give you 0 to 30 days, you can say, hey, I don't have to pay those this week. But if you got some things that are hanging out there, you go, I really need to get some money to these guys or they're going to shut me off. So you have a list of what you have some flexibility, but you're going to pay. And then after you subtract all that, so you got the plus of the cash, plus of the ARs, accounts receivables you think you'll collect, minus the known expenses, minus the debt payments, minus the accounts payable you choose to spend, you will have an ending balance, hopefully positive. That ending balance will become part of your planned beginning balance next week, which right. You'll add collect money that you collect next week. Oh, I didn't put that on there either. Well, I did under accounts receivable. There might be some cash sales and things like that
right.
That you expect to come in. But basically, you're looking at, you're disciplining yourself to understand your business. You do this anyway.
Yeah.
You do it driving around.
Exactly.
You open your app at the stoplight, you know, and look, oh, yeah. And then you try to remember, but the federal FICA payment hasn't come out yet. You know, payroll's coming out Wednesday.
Right.
And so you're doing it trying to keep track of it. Well, if you have good books and you get into a rhythm of doing this, you will get known quantities that are matched in time, right? So you want to make sure your receivables are due at the same, you know, that same week is the correct amount.
Yeah.
And then you can predict, and it gives you the flexibility to say, hey, I am going to be short cash. I'm just not going to pay this supplier this amount.
Right.
And it's a tough position to be in, but a lot of us, we've all been there mm-hmm. where you start making those choices.
Well, I think.
So I don't know. Hopefully that's clear.
Yeah, I think it's clear. I think everything makes sense. The big thing is everyone has done this already. It's probably been in their head. It's typically the reactionary, not the proactive rhythm that people have. But this is the step that they take when, oh crap, I just got that big bill that I forgot about, or how am I going to meet payroll this week? You sit down, you think about how much cash do I have? Who owes me money? What else do I need to pay? What can I delay payment on? People are going through this practice already as a business owner, but it's usually not a proactive approach where they're every Tuesday getting the cash flow report and making decisions. So right. I think that's the big difference for everyone.
And doing it in your head, I think you said this, but is always wrong.
It's always wrong.
I mean, if you're a one-man band and you've got 3 accounts receivable and no employees, you probably keep pretty good track.
Right.
But you get past that, you're just wrong. You just forgot something or misestimated something. You just did.
There's just always something. There's software fees. There's things that, you know, the annual software that you forgot that you don't, you know, you pay for, but you forget about it, right? Then you have... you already mentioned all the taxes that come out for employees, workman comp insurance that comes out. Maybe if you only pay that once a year, that could hit you hard. There's quarterly payments that you have. There's, you know, bonuses that come up. There's interest payments. There's credit cards for you and for employees. And then there's people that bill you late and you forgot about the invoice. I mean, there's just so many things that happen. You've got to stay on top of it. And so having this regular rhythm, I think the weekly is probably the most realistic for a lot of listeners. And you know, if you can do it more than that, great. But weekly is a great place to start. And it just gets you aware of the score. It allows you to really keep score at a very basic level and a current level where you can see where you stand and what you need to do to score more points, right? And you made a good point. You made a good point earlier, I think before the call, that it's really important that we mention this is not profit. This is just cash flow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is not where you make decisions around profitability. It's a cash flow report.
And we all know that
profitability and cash are completely different animals. They're vaguely related because if you don't make a profit over time, your cash is going to go away, period. Right. If you do make a profit over time and don't do some stupid things, your cash will increase. Mm-hmm. But they're different subjects. And most of us, I think, well, in my experience with most of the people I've worked with, spend a great deal more time thinking about cash mm-hmm. than you do about profitability.
Yeah.
We've talked about that many times.
We have. And I think I would equate it to doing, you know, when you go to the doctor's office, the first thing you do is they take your weight, they check your blood pressure, your heart rate,
right.
all these
vital
things,
sign.
Your vital signs. This is that. It's not going to say whether you are, you know, going to live till you're 100 years old. It's not going to say whether you have cancer or not or anything like that. But it's going to give you some leading indicators as to where things are going, right? If your cash flow report is in a healthy balance, you should theoretically be on the path towards profitability, but not necessarily, right? Same difference. You want to make sure that you are in a good spot. It's your vital signs for this week.
Well, we will. I think we're going to talk about some specific uses for it. But one thing is it's a gauge of your health, vital signs. That's a great. If you're constantly struggling to pay your bills, something's going on. Mm-hmm. You're either not profitable or you are profitable, but you're doing some stupid things with your cash, like drawing it out and buying something or buying equipment you don't necessarily need. And if you're not aware of your cash position, you'll be more inclined to go make some of those decisions thinking, oh yeah, I got the money. Mm-hmm. than you are if you don't have the cash. And if you do decide it's a decision you need to make, like buy a new loader,
right?
You got to have one, then you finance it or finance a large part of it rather than paying out with cash.
Yeah.
Which, you know, some people hate debt, averse to debt at all times, but I'm not one of them. I'm not against the efficient use of debt. I'm just against stupid debt.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know it was stupid till after you do it. But anyway.
Well, and something that I was, you know, thinking about in prep for this is most people, their reaction, you know, if they're not using a cash flow report, when you say if they're struggling to make payments, typically it becomes a procrastination thing where they don't want to look at the cash flow report because it's going to mean bad news and that produces fear and anxiety in them. And so that they just don't think about it. Then they're fine. And the way that they cover for that anxiety is that they go and they sell another job and they use that cash deposit from the next job to put their cash position in a better position for mentally, right? Theoretically, right? But the reality is look at the cash flow report because that's going to give you the honest answer, whether you collected a deposit or not, right? And that's not we've talked about the vicious cycle all the time. Where you just, if you're taking cash from one job to pay so that you can complete the job that you had before, you're running a legal Ponzi scheme, essentially, right? And that's the vicious cycle, right? Just like Bernie Madoff did his Ponzi scheme and was giving returns to people from other people's deposits or investments, whatever you want to call it. All you're doing is growing a problem. Because it might start with something small. Maybe it's, I'm floating $5,000 from this job to pay for the one that I need to finish up, right? But it only creates a problem where it grows and grows and grows, and soon 5,000 is 50,000, soon 50,000 is 200,000, and then you're lost, right? So that's a big thing that I would say is, if you're not looking at a cash flow report, it's typically because you're, one, don't have good books, but two, you're also kind of ignoring it and trying to like procrastinate it. But if you can get in this rhythm, it gives you a much better reality check of where you stand.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to stick your head in the sand, things are not going to go well.
Yeah.
You have to look. And one of the things that a cash flow report does is, as we said, if you're constantly struggling, mm-hmm. you need to know why, and you don't wind up in the contractor Ponzi scheme. Well, you can do it without, it's usually because you're losing money and you don't know it. Sometimes it's because people took draws and things. So the one good thing about having a cash flow report is it alerts you that, hey, this is not good, or maybe it is very good, but if it's not good, I have to do something about it.
Right.
And we've talked about it before. If you have to go over and look and see if you're profitable. If you're not profitable, you have to get profitable. And even though cash is probably the most important thing in business, I have several most important things. The first priority is you have to be profitable. You have to be selling things for more than they cost you. Otherwise, you're toast. I mean, it's going to kill you quickly or kill you slowly, but you must be profitable, and you have to know that. That requires you to go over and look at the profit loss statement. And that, again, requires good books, and that's a different topic. But if you go over there and you're profitable and you're still not getting anywhere with your cash, we've talked about it before, but there are only four possible reasons. So you're profitable, but you don't have cash. There are only four reasons. And one of them is you haven't been paid yet, which we've talked about. In other words, you made a profit, got a nice profit, but you have large accounts receivable. So you're showing a profit, but you don't have the cash because you haven't been paid. Second reason is I used the cash, I already spent it buying assets in construction and home building and so on. It's buying assets is buying loaders, equipment, inventory.
Inventory.
You know, if you have to buy the inventory of parts that you're putting into an electrical job. But those are assets. They're not expenses until you charge a customer. But they're not, you've used your cash because it's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
The third thing, so you've got, you haven't been paid yet, receivables. You already spent it buying assets. Third one is that you've already spent it paying off debt. So you make profit, but you have debt payments from previous loans that you've taken out.
Mm-hmm.
You take your cash and pay that off. That's not an expense. It's a loan repayment, but it consumes your cash. Then the fourth one is you took it. So you haven't been paid yet. You already spent it buying assets, already spent it paying off debt, only already spent it by taking it out as a draw, which is not an expense. So if you're having trouble with cash and you are making money, seek first to find out if you're making money. If you're having trouble with cash, you have to look at those four areas. You have to increase the speed with which you collect your receivables. You have to do a better job of managing your inventory. You have to do a better job of paying off debt. And there are things you can do to pay off debt. And you need to do a better job of managing your draws, like maybe don't take as many.
Yeah.
So it's great because it warns you that you need to start looking. And then those are the places that you start looking.
Yeah. And would you agree that, I mean, and you see everything, all four of those options happen all the time, but especially for the business owner, you see a lot of draws and they don't happen necessarily in the way that they think. It's not like, you just transferred the money to your bank account, but it comes in the form of, hey, you went to the Sonic drive-thru for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day, you know?
Right.
Those are meals, but you should be paying for your own meals out of your personal account, not your business account, right? Discretionary spending, right? That's where a lot of the draws are going. And so there's a lot of ways to kind of tidy some of that stuff up so that you maintain the cash in your business. Let's talk about some of these specific decisions. So purchasing inventory is a big one, right? If you're looking at your weekly cash flow report, right? You know exactly what's coming in, what's going out. You know where your cash position is. How is that going to help you make better decisions around your inventory turns?
Well, being aware is what makes you better decisions around inventory turns. Inventory turns are your cost of goods sold divided by your average inventory for a year, right? So if your cost of goods sold for parts and materials is $1 million and you have $500,000 inventory on hand at all times throughout a year, you're turning your inventory twice.
Right.
Okay. If you can manage your inventory so that you turn your inventory four times, in other words, you still do $1 million worth of cost of goods sold, but you typically only have $250,000 on hand, you have freed up $250,000 of cash that was tied up in inventory. And right. Yes, it really works that way. Say, well, I need the parts. Well, you know, I'm thinking of my electrical friends. How many of you bought a bunch of fittings and specialty lighting fixtures and things? Some of those, not specialty, but conventional, but special for the job you're on, lighting fixtures. And you wind up with a lot of things left in the back of your truck. Take them back to the supplier.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's just a truckload, but you'd be surprised. Yeah. You take it back to the supplier and get your credit back for it, as opposed to putting it in your shop and driving over it with a forklift, right? Or forgetting that you have it and go buy another box of GFCIs,
right?
That costs a lot of money, right? So being aware that manage your inventory, it's that $250,000 that I said, mentioned, is not, that's real. That's a common number. That's not some big guy. Some of you laugh at that.
Maybe, well, and it's not just a common number. It's a, oh, I don't have that much inventory number, you know?
Yeah. And you go out there and catch, whoa, you know?
Exactly.
You've got all the overages for the last 2 years sitting out in your shop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Easy to get 100,000.
So, and that's, so, to be clear, like that's a, just an operations thing as well. Like it changes the way that you operate your business. Hey guys, stop running to the supplier to grab extra stuff. You have to check in our shop first. You know, it allows you to set up, it goes, now we're setting up inventory management software. Now we're doing consignment through our warehouse where the supplier sets right. up a consignment store. And when we pull it out of the gate, it counts yeah. towards our inventory. So effectively we're doing inventory turns every day. You know, we only have like current this day, that's what our inventory turn is, you know?
Yep. And there are even companies I've met recently that, I mean, lots of different ways to do it if you intend to do it, but they know what's going to happen tomorrow on the job. And they have the supplier carry the inventory and the trucks go pick it up by name, by the guy picking it up and by the job, just what they're going to use every yep. day. So the supplier has the inventory right up until they go pick it up. Not totally sold on that because the guys have got to go to the supply house every day. But
yeah, it adds time, all that kind of
half
stuff.
$500,000 of inventory in your shop.
Well, I mean, there's the suppliers that'll go to your truck. They'll come to your warehouse. They'll put everything yeah. on the truck. And when you pull it off the truck, it scans and that's when you pay for it.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And that's a place to get down the road. And I have a lot of people who are doing that.
Yeah,
and suppliers love it because they get all your business. You love it. But you have to be a disciplined partner. You and your supplier have to be partners at that point.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, to answer your original question, what's the good of managing that? If you see your inventory turns, mm-hmm. if you know that number, and whoever gives you this report can calculate that number and give it to you, mm-hmm. right? If you know that number and you say, what? I'm turning it once a year, which means you have a whole year's worth of cost of goods sold sitting on your shelf, or twice or three times a year, I can do better. Set a goal and do it, and the money will just show up, right? If you measure it, you can manage it. And manage things, measured things seem to get better just because you're measuring them.
Yeah.
That's Drucker, one of those guys, right? So that's one other benefit. You can track your turns. You're asking about how we could use it, I think. You were wondering about receivables.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about we were talking before the episode too. People understand, I think, you give your clients 30 days, right? And most of them take more than that. Man, yeah, I think that's fair, right? Maybe they take 45 days. It's the same thing. If you have $1 million worth of receivables out there, and your average is 45 days and you allow 30, if you can get it back down to 30, you're saving about, what is that? I think the math would be about $500,000. Did I say $1 million worth of receivables?
Mm-hmm.
You're saving a third of that, right? So $330,000 of cash gets freed up. You say, well, what, how can I affect that? You know, how can I understand that. I know it. What do I do? Well, one of the first things you do is prompt billing so that the 30 days begins as soon as possible. You follow up with people. You call them when they're coming due, and you're trying to, you stay on top and people come to understand. You do correct billing and you do prompt billing, right?
Well, and a lot of these things, I mean, if you're working with, if you're a subcontractor and you've got big GCs, sure, there's contracts, they're not getting paid if it's a big municipal job on certain schedules. It's a little bit more challenging to get paid really quickly. But if you're working directly with homeowners, if you're working with smaller GCs as a subcontractor, you need to be billing regularly and your payment terms need to be much faster. You don't give a homeowner 30 days. I've seen it. You don't do it. I've seen landscaping companies that give apartment complexes 30 days. No, you do the job, you get paid. That's what it should be. Now, if you're doing, hey, I go four times a month and I want to get paid once a month, that's different. But it's not like, hey, I mowed all of March and then I'm not going to get paid until April 30th because that's my payment terms. No, yeah. You get paid March 30th for doing all of March. You've already floated basically the first 4 weeks of March. You don't need to float another 4 weeks for that apartment complex. And there's so many tools out there that will do it for you. Like you can, you know, for landscaper example, you can use Jobber to literally, every time you've done the job, bill their card automatically. They don't have, right. if they put their card information on there, it's there. You can charge as soon as the job's done, right? And that's how it should be. And there's not enough contractors billing due upon receipt. I think needs to be a bigger thing in the industry. And I also think that not enough people are having a better payment schedule, a really quick payment schedule where they're getting a 50% deposit up front. You need to be doing those things because especially the way that, you know, things are looking with price increases and labor price increases, you have to get paid quickly because otherwise you're not going to be able to stay up to date. It's just not going to happen. And then on top of that, increase your prices. I think that's something that we haven't touched on with the cash flow report. If you need to increase prices, you're going to see it really quickly on the cash flow report because you're not going to have enough cash. And nothing that you really do besides looking at maybe your debt management is going to fix it besides increasing your prices. So anyways, that's my two cents there. But
goes back to you have to be profitable. That is the number one question. If you're not profitable, you got to fix that or hang it up.
Yeah.
You got to do what it takes.
Right. Well, and let's talk about the accounts payable. I know there are a lot of people out there, and this has been me at times too. They like pride themselves on paying things early and just they don't like having the bills. As soon as they get it, it's paid, it's done. And that may not be the smartest thing, right?
I think it is not the smartest thing.
Okay.
There may be some ancillary reason to do that, you know, some reason I don't know. But paying in terms is always a really good idea.
Yeah,
paying
absolutely.
Exactly on terms, but paying just because you don't want to worry about it is not a good idea generally. And accounts payable are aged just like receivables. In other words, things that you have that are current, in other words, they're not due until the end of 30 days. Things that are past due, maybe 1 or 2 days, but they were due in 30 and we're now on day 32 or 40 or something and on out to 90. When you get out there too far, you start losing credibility with your suppliers and run the danger of not being able to, they won't sell to you anymore, at least not on credit terms. So that's another one that you look at every week when you get your cash flow information and say, well, I have this much money remaining after paying my payroll and my known expenses and receiving receivables and all this. I have these many bills to pay. And you circle the ones, these are the ones I'm going to pay. And so you're managing the cash. Maybe you still can't pay everything that's due, which is not a good position, but maybe you can't. But at least you've made a decision. You're not, it forces you to have a plan. I'm going to pay that guy.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to pay these people. They're important. And then again, you're aware that for some reason I'm falling short on cash every month. I got to go fix it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you gave some examples. You have some examples of maybe businesses you know or have worked with that have really milked the payables. I know we talked about Walmart in the past, but essentially, you know, that's how Sam Walton, his growth strategy was to collect at the point of sale, like you check out at Walmart, but then your payables, he would have 90-day payment terms with a lot of his suppliers. And so essentially, he would just use that as his lending source.
Well, accounts receivable have DSO, days sale outstanding, which is the number of days it takes you to collect. That's the 45 days, 30 days that we were talking about. There's the same thing for payables. In other words, how long it takes you to pay the average account payable. And there are companies, and I'm thinking one, it's a very large, matter of fact, it's about the 10th largest company in the United States in terms of sales.
Oh, I know this one.
And they, I'm not going to use their name, but they, and it's not because I'm scared of them, but I just said they were in the top 10 and I was looking the other day, I couldn't find them. So maybe they're not there anymore, but billions of dollars, like $200 billion in sales, this company, billion. Their average accounts receivable, they collect in about 24 days, 24, 25 days. I don't remember exactly. Their average accounts payable, they pay in like 95 days. And it's the spread between those two that operates their entire company. And it's a publicly traded company. Everybody knows it. It has very, 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 like 0.5% net profit margins. About $250 million in sales the year I looked at their financials, and it made $1.5
billion. $250 billion in sales. You said million.
Billion is, yeah. Oh, yeah. Billion in sales. And it made $1.5 billion. So what's that? A half a percent?
If that.
Net profit?
A little less.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, and funded entirely by the spread between receivables and payables.
But there's.
And our listeners are doing, a lot of our listeners are doing that or have done that, obviously. Yeah. With the pressure on to get the money collected and then going to pay the supply company next month.
Well, it's trickle down economics, if you ask me.
Right.
Does the same GCs that these subs are winning jobs from are not paying on time? They're stretching it out to 90 days, 120 days more. I've seen more regularly, and they say, "Man, we're just not able to pay right now." Da 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 da, and then these subs in turn have to tell their suppliers, hey, I can't afford to pay my bill. Like, can you give me more credit line to be able to get more supplies so I can do the job? And it's, you can't do it. You can't do it. You're setting yourself up for failure. So tell the GC, no, I can't do the job because you don't pay, right? And start asking for large deposits up front. And then, you know, you've got to make sure you have a lien process in as well, because file the lien early, right? Don't wait till 150 days to file the lien. File it as soon as the payment terms are over, file the lien. Yeah, maybe they don't like you, but say, you don't pay on time, so I can't trust you, right? So anyways,
there are people listening, I know, who are thinking, yeah, right, I'm going to tell this giant GC, he's got to give me 50% deposit, and they're not going to do it. And I mean, a lot of them won't do it because you got a competitor who says, I'll stand in there and float you the money and not get paid and go broke later on. But in the meantime, you lost the job. But I do urge people not to just self deselect. Don't just,
you have to ask.
Stupid. You have to ask. And we need to have Eric Daffron on again, because I had a guy I was giving a talk 2 weeks ago tomorrow, a group of guys, and one of them is a specific trade, works for big GCs, and he was complaining about the pay if paid clause. In other words, I'm not going to pay you if I don't get paid. And I said, well, don't do it. He goes, well, I got to have these jobs. They're huge jobs. What do I do? I said, well, negotiate that out. Well, they won't do that. And I said, well, it sounds to me like you're self-deselecting. Well, I had Eric Daffron, talking to Eric Daffron the other day, our construction attorney. Mm-hmm. And in Oklahoma, anyway, he has been successful negotiating that language out of contracts. And in Oklahoma, the case law is such that if a GC doesn't pay you because he didn't get paid by the owner because the electrician screwed it up and you're the plumber, he has to pay you. That's the case law in Oklahoma. Well, a lot of people think it's not, and it is. So you can understand where you can negotiate that sort of thing out, and you try. That's what I'm saying.
Just try.
Just don't self-deselect and say, can't be done. Right.
Yeah.
Because if pay if paid is going to wipe you out, or funding maybe $2 million worth of 10% retainers for 5 years, you know, until you finally collect it.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, you don't even remember the address of the job. We can try to make it correct.
I think
try to make it where it works.
Yeah, there are these huge jobs. We can't afford to lose them. Well, like these huge jobs are causing huge problems.
Yeah, you can't afford to do them.
You can't afford to do them. Why not just have smaller problems? Yeah. Like it's a smaller problem to say, hey, I've got to let a crew go, than it is to say, hey, I'm taking out personal lines of credit to be able to make payroll every month because this GC is not going to pay me, you know? So at the end of the day, it's got to be a part of your identity. Hey, we don't do work unless we receive this amount in deposits. It's who we are, right? We do not finance our clients. We don't. They have a bank for that. They can use their line of credit to pay us if they are not getting paid by the end user of the service, right? So anyways, that's my two cents. I think more people, especially in construction, need to stick to it. So anyways, Martin, this has been a good episode, I think. More in depth than I thought we were going to go. I was expecting 20 minutes. We're sitting here at 37. So thanks for covering the cash flow point.
I want to kind of reiterate that you just get that information every week. It can all be on one piece of paper. It can be a list of papers, but your cash balance, the accounts receivable age, so that you can see what's likely to come in, your known expenses, your known debt service, your accounts payables age, so that you can select what you're going to pay and whatnot, and just get that rhythm of watching it, and you'll be familiar, and you'll start to be anxious, like, why are our receivables? What can we do about that?
Yeah.
And it'll make you a better manager. And always be sure you're making money too. Go back over there and make sure you're making a profit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks for chatting. I'll see you on the next one.
Okay, sir. Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to The Cashflow Contractor. Check out our website in the show notes or visit thecashflowcontractor.com.